Baby. Driving. No purchase necessary.
Following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers slash sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
So many primetime games, so many bye weeks. But here we are, another episode of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All after a Ravens victory on Monday Night Football. How about that, Josh?
Yeah. Great offensive showing by both teams, as expected.
Thank you for giving me a decent answer to that. I thought you were just going to go with just Marshawn Lynch me the whole way.
It was good. Yeah. Impressive.
Is that all, Josh?
No, that's it, yeah. But no, it was a great offensive showing by both teams, as you and I both called it right there. You know, even though the Ravens' defense was superior to New Orleans' defense, you know, we did expect that both teams were going to give up a good amount of points, a good amount of yards, and it was an exciting Monday Night Football game. Pretty much unlike, you know, some Monday Night Football games we've seen this year, or even
Thursday nights. Sunday Night Football games? There have been some.
By the way, speaking of Thursday Night Football, congrats to the Oakland Raiders. You finally broke the ofer.
He broke the ofer. So I know that the 72 Dolphins, they always sip the champagne when the last unbeaten team goes down every year. Who sips the champagne whenever the last winless team?
Look for the warmest six-pack of alcoholic beverage possible, and they just drink it in disgust.
The warmest six-pack.
Yeah, because
you've totally lost my appetite now, Josh.
Well, I just think only losers drink warm beer.
Okay,
right?
Well, here it is. This is the week of Thanksgiving, okay?
Yep. Happy Thanksgiving to all of our listeners. Happy Thanksgiving week to all our listeners.
And Black Friday and Cyber Monday week.
Yeah, don't kill each other, please.
Yeah, I'm going to be sitting from the comfort of my own home with a laptop on my lap, beer cold, feet propped up on my couch, and I'm going to be doing my shopping that way. And also, you think about Thanksgiving, what also is lost is that the Wednesday before Thanksgiving is the biggest drinking day of the year.
Yep, that's right, Thanksgiving Eve. And, you know, there are a lot of messages and public service announcements we can, dish out there to all of our listeners of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. You know, Thanksgiving Eve, make sure you have a designated driver. On Thanksgiving, please don't get into any fights with your family members. I know your in-laws must drive you nuts, but hey.
Especially your racist uncles. They must be having a field day this week.
Or even on Friday, on Black Friday, please don't push that mother and child aside so you can get the TV that's 80% off.
So you can get that Wii U Smash Brothers bundle that is just selling out like crazy.
Yeah, it'll be back there in a couple weeks. Just...
Order it all online because it's definitely available. Actually, the best
that's how I do my shopping.
The
now.
Best deal for that bundle that I just mentioned, the Wii U and the Super Smash Brothers bundle, is available online at the best price. It's like $340 something.
Could you imagine if Cyber Monday shopping was just as brutal as Black Friday shopping? If you're online shopping, you'll have like a name pop up saying Bears Lover 99 just bought this out. Sorry. And then next thing you know, you're hating Bears Lover 99 for the rest of your life.
This sounds like a premise for Jingle All the Way 3.
Or Jingle All the Way 2. Yeah.
I can't believe there is a second Jingle All the Way.
Love straight to DVD, man.
That is something that I learned this past weekend, was that there is a Jingle All the Way 2. It is being made. It is happening. But sadly, it does not contain Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Or Sinbad.
No Sinbad either.
Yeah.
What is Sinbad up to these days?
Is he
exploring things?
No,
Sinbad the Explorer?
I think he's still doing comedy. I mean, you remember, he was in a lot of movies in the 90s, a lot of kid movies, too.
Yeah, a lot of movies in the 90s. Someone else I can think of as a comedian that's gone by the wayside, Bill Cosby? Too soon?
Yeah, too soon.
Sorry, buddy.
Yeah, but on this week's episode of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, we will be talking about the Baltimore Ravens' big win over the Saints, big road win on Monday Night Football against the New Orleans Saints. Ravens advance to 7-4 and go into week 13 at home against a San Diego Chargers team that started off hot but has fallen to the wayside the last several games. So,
ever since Phillip Rivers had that fantastic performance where he gave up negative fantasy points to anybody who may have him on your fantasy team.
Yep. Also, we will be talking about some Orioles transactions that have happened this past weekend. Nope, it wasn't Pablo Sandoval. Nope, it wasn't Hanley Ramirez. Yes, nope. We will be talking about that too.
It also wasn't Giancarlo Stanton.
No, definitely. No, definitely not Giancarlo Stanton. Well, that's the craziest deal I've ever seen in the history of Major League Baseball. I thought A-Rod's was crazy. This is nuts.
But what does it teach you, though, Josh?
Not to sign a player for 10 years, $300 million.
Exactly. People do not learn their lesson, and history will repeat itself in Major League Baseball until all these teams go bankrupt.
Yeah, and what was a part of that deal that he can opt out after his third year? Yeah, what do you think he's going to do when he's with that franchise? He's going to opt out. He's like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to demand a trade right now. Let me be somebody else's problem. Also, the Maryland Terrapins win at the Big House in Michigan.
It wasn't a maybe. It was fact, as I said last week.
Yep, and it may have cost Brady Hoke his job.
No, what's going to cost Brady Hoke his job is ultimately losing to Ohio State.
Yeah, again.
Because if he beats Ohio State...
He's keeping his job.
He is keeping his job, because that is the ultimate factor in the Big Ten about those two teams, is who is going to keep their job, as in, can you beat Michigan? Or, as Ohio State calls them, can you beat the turds up north?
Yeah, or, you know, you could say that losing to Ohio State would cost him his job, but losing to the new kids in the Big Ten in your own house...
In your own house, by the way. That's... And they were a man down.
It's unacceptable.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll also be talking what happened in college football this past weekend. The top five has stayed the same.
The top seven actually has stayed the same.
Top seven has stayed the same, yeah. But there are some games this weekend that could change the course for most teams a little bit. But let's start. Oh, and also our two-minute rants. Mine is going to be related to players refusing to talk to the media and why it shouldn't be a big deal. Wink, okay.
Mine is going to be about that guy's former team, the Buffalo Bills.
Okay, so what, is it going to have to do with the blizzard up in Buffalo?
It could have something to do with that, you could say.
Oh, man.
I really hope that never comes here.
By the way, I know I may be in the minority saying this, but I would have wanted them to play that game in the blizzard just to see if they would make, like, little trails in 4 foot deep of snow. It would be the most boring game in NFL history, but... It would look so much fun.
It would look like a bunch of groundhogs playing against each other.
Yeah, whoever scores first wins.
Or prairie dogs, one of those guys that create the little mounds of sand as they go through the ground.
Yep.
I mean, I you want to see that game happen. There would be nobody in the stands as long as they wouldn't force people to buy a ticket there.
Ooh.
Emergency alert service? This is a test of the emergency alert system.
No, it was my laptop. I don't know why it did that.
Turn your sound down, boy.
The sound.
This is not amateur hour.
The sound is down now. The sound is down. So, my apologies there, folks.
You're not supposed to draw attention to it. Just move on. Just move on. We're talking Ravens and Saints here. Okay, the Ravens, they defeated the Saints. The Saints were able to put up 420 yards from Drew Brees, but a lot of that was garbage time. Let's be honest with that.
Yeah, it was a lot of garbage time, but you look at it this way, though. You had a game on Monday Night Football, and Drew Brees, his career statistics on Monday Night Football are impeccable. What I believe before the game, it was, what, 25 touchdowns, 3 interceptions that he has thrown on Monday Night Football? That's a pretty impressive resume there for the Pro Bowl or Super Bowl champion.
But was also on his resume is that he has never defeated the Baltimore Ravens.
Yep. Beforehand, he was 0-3 against the Baltimore Ravens. One loss when he was with the Chargers pre-Philip Rivers era. And his other two losses, one was at his home dome where he was 0-1 and on the road against the Ravens at M&T Bank where he became 0-2.
Wait, why does that sound like that's from Ninja Turtles? The home dome?
The home dome?
Yeah.
I don't know why. I mean, wasn't the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, it was just called the Superdome originally, correct?
I actually did call it the Louisiana Superdome. That's pretty much what I've always known it as, is the Superdome.
Yeah, and...
Just like I've known the Baltimore Arena as the Baltimore Arena. I mean, a lot of people call it the Civic Center, but other people will call it First Mariner Arena. I'm like, are they even in business still, or...
The old timers call it the Civic Center, though.
Yeah, I've always called it the Baltimore Arena because
same as me, yeah.
For as long as I remember, I've been going to arena crosses out there, different events, boxing matches, and everything else that's been down there at the Baltimore Arena. And it was always just before the block.
All right, so
as everyone calls it.
Okay, so let's look past the superstitious stats that Drew Brees had, you know, before this game, after this game, and what have you. What stood out to you the most in the Ravens' 34-27 victory over the Saints?
Justin Forsett continues to be a beast. Is legit.
Yeah.
As I called about 5 weeks ago.
And he seems to be the shining light on your ESPN fantasy team.
Yeah, nobody cares about that, Josh.
I know nobody cares about that, but it's amazing how bad your team has been this year, but he's been that shining light, though.
Yeah, thanks for giving him to me.
Yeah, absolutely. You're welcome.
I gave him to you for LeSean McCoy and a suspended Josh Gordon.
Yeah, and I unfortunately traded Josh Gordon to the best team in our league.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Did that trade get vetoed like every other trade?
No, it didn't. It went through.
All right, so anyway, back to this game right here.
Yeah, Justin Forsett.
Yeah, Justin Forsett,
man.
185, or was it 189? I think it was
182 yards off of 22 carries.
Boy, Samsonite, I was way off on that one.
Yeah, but it was a little generous, though, because it seemed like he had that many yards, just the way he was running the ball all night.
And you talk about yards after the first hit.
Yeah.
He was never really hit on some of these runs. He just went through the holes between the offensive and defensive line like a hot knife through butter. I mean, it was just smooth. He just went, whoosh, gone. And he just so many times where it just looked like he'd be stopped instantly. He wasn't even tackled, Josh, and he was the complete opposite of what Torrey Smith was. I mean, what, Torrey Smith had, what, 50 yards after the catch? The yak yards?
Yeah.
He had over 89 yards along with Steve Smith, who had 98. That was Torrey Smith and Steve Smith, the 1-2 punch of Smiths.
Yeah.
All you need is a John Smith.
Yep, Torrey Smith was the leading receiver that night, 5 catches for 98 yards, and... You know, 40 yards was his deepest, you know, catch of the night. Same with Steve Smith, who had 4 catches for 89 yards and a touchdown, which pretty much he was sitting on his butt catching that touchdown. And when I saw that play in the first half, it was just amazing because when you look at the replay, it didn't even look like he caught the ball. It just looked like a defensive back and a running back just getting tangled in the end zone.
I just love it how you look at both Torrey Smith and Steve Smith seniors' stats, you know, back-to-back, and both of them have their longest catch at 40 yards.
Yeah, and it seems to me that the more we see Torrey Smith get open and making catches, the more productive that the Ravens are. I mean, you can look at more statistics. For example, the night Justin Forsett had, 12 of the Ravens' 23 first downs were on the ground, 12 first down runs, and you had 9 passing first downs as well. Third down efficiency, and this was key for the Baltimore Ravens, 9 for 13 on third down efficiency. You can look at the game as much as you want statistic-wise. Yeah, we know the Ravens defense gave up 525 total yards to the New Orleans Saints. That was expected to happen. But if your punter only kicks off 2 punts, you know, you're going to have a pretty good night, especially against a powerhouse offense like the New Orleans Saints.
Well, unless he's only punting twice because you turned the ball over 4 times.
Yeah, and another play that was crucial for the Ravens in the first half, just a little early in the game, was Kyle Juszczyk's, I believe he caught like a small pass from Flacco and was running it in, and it seemed like the ball was knocked out around the 1-yard line. And that was a play where, as good as the Ravens were running the ball and getting the ball out, had that fumble not occurred, this game towards the end of the fourth quarter may not have been as close as it was.
Yeah, I mean, considering that the Saints scored that touchdown before the half and it seemed like they were back in this game, that could have been a different factor right then and there. Justin Forsett, by the way, first half, 115 yards at the half. That was just something incredible. I haven't seen a Ravens running back performance like that since Jamal Lewis against the Browns. You remember that season that he had 200 yards twice against them?
2003, yeah, and that other 200-yard game was on the road in Cleveland where we thought, hey, you know what, Cleveland's going to stop him, but no, it's not going
to
happen.
They had absolutely no answer for him that year whatsoever. It was an amazing thing to watch, and seeing Justin Forsett run the way he has and seeing how they picked him up. You look at parallels between the Baltimore Orioles and the Ravens, and you look at the offseason signing of Nelson Cruz. You got Nelson Cruz, who was a big key factor, the difference maker for the Baltimore Orioles, that catalyst that put them up above and, you know, had them win the AL East. And the Ravens and Justin Forsett stepping up in place of a now gone Ray Rice is just spoken volumes for this team. Between him and Steve Smith Sr., what a Ozzie Newsome at it again.
Yeah, you look at Justin Forsett, a former seventh round pick who just seemed to be a running back that was moving through depth charts, especially through Gary Kubiak's former system with the Houston Texans. And it seemed like when Forsett joined the Ravens in preseason, we thought, oh, he's just going to hold the fort down until Ray Rice returns from his suspension. Well, as history would unfold, Ray Rice would soon get indefinitely suspended, released from the Baltimore Ravens.
We all know that story.
We know how that story goes. And then we see how big of a difference there is in a running game when you have a healthy, hard-hitting running back like Justin Forsett, who, despite his height, just runs with absolute power. And it really is amazing to see a running game as effective as the Ravens, because when you look at the NFL and how it's constructed nowadays, you can have every quarterback pass for over 300 yards. But when your running game amasses over 125 rushing yards or more, you're going to win that game more times than not.
That you will. And you look on the other side of the ball with Drew Brees, 420 yards, 3 touchdowns. They had the, they had the 80 yards at the end of the game, junk time, as I said earlier, but the way that he put up those numbers, if you see a Drew Brees putting up over 400 yards against the defense, you're going to expect that team to win the game, right? Wrong. That's just the way that a lot of people say, it's a passing league now, but what we learned in the Super Bowl, defense still matters. We learned last night, the running game still very much matters for the NFL teams. And yeah, Joe Flacco, 18 of 24, 243 yards, 1 touchdown. But the key stat for him, no turnovers, no interceptions. Kyle Juszczyk had that one fumble, and that was pretty much it. The one interception that Drew Brees threw, a pick six to Will Hill, who had Jimmy Graham's number pretty much all night. Will Hill played lights out last night.
Yep, Will Hill played lights out. He was defending all night against Jimmy Graham, who we can expect to see in the NFC on the NFC team in the 2014 Pro Bowl with the way he plays that position at tight end. And the way Will Hill played aggressively and the way he was able to read the routes like that Jimmy Graham was going to run, it was nice to see some decent safety play. You know, even though, yeah, there was 420 passing yards amassed by the Saints, you had the secondary play. You had the secondary play well at the right place at the right time, especially that Hill pick six.
Yeah, and the Saints couldn't finish off their drives. They were driving down the field and just couldn't really finish it at all.
How about the Ravens' defensive line, though?
Yeah,
we got to give them a lot of credit.
Drew Brees got sacked 4 times on Monday Night Football, and
twice by Elvis Dumervil.
Twice by Elvis Dumervil.
Career year.
Twice by Elvis Dumervil, who has researched himself since faxing in the wrong contract at the deadline, and then you had it to where Terrell Suggs got his 100th sack on Monday Night Football. So congratulations to him. I know you saw that graphic where they showed all the jerseys that Suggs has sacked over his career since 2003, and no surprise on that one. Ben Roethlisberger.
That was 11.5 times, yeah. And then you see Brady got sacked about 4 times or so. I don't see Manny much on there, but I do see a lot of Browns jerseys, though.
Yeah, that's Elvis Dumervil. C.J. Mosley, 9 tackles. He also had 1 sack
What a pickup. What a pickup in the first round the Ravens made with Mosley. He seems to me, out of all of the defensive starters, I do think Dumervil is a good leader to have on that defense. I think in the next year or so, you're going to see C.J. Mosley leading that defense because he has a heck of a head on his shoulders, and he seems to play the game the right way. He seems to improve as the season goes on and just seems to do things that we don't expect him to do, and that is pretty much the solid contribution that you can get from the rookie out of Alabama.
And there are times when I have Ravens games on in the background. There are times when I'm actually watching the Ravens, but every time that purple and black is on my television or on my radio, I am hearing C.J. Mosley's name called time and time again. The guy plays lights out. Just, you know, he hunkers down, bunkers down. He's the real deal, Josh, and the Ravens got themselves a great pick in C.J. Mosley, Alabama guy as well. And Ozzie loves those Alabama guys, doesn't he?
Yeah, he loves those Alabama guys. You could go back to Terrence Cody, who just never seemed to found his way onto the football field, and you could have people saying, oh, look, another Alabama pick that faltered. What a shock. But you had a guy come along like C.J. Mosley, who seems to be a very well-educated in terms of the play of football, very educated and is able to play at a high level, and a guy who we can see making multiple Pro Bowls with the way he's playing. Ray, he could lead the league the next several years in tackles the way he's playing right now.
No surprise there. I mean, you average 9 tackles, 10 tackles a game, you're going to be putting up some decent numbers. On the other side of the football with the New Orleans Saints and their defensive line play, how predictable were those blitzes that they were busting out there?
Yeah, I mean, look, you don't expect your quarterback to go hitless for the entire game. You could say, all right, well, Joe Flacco, he did get 3 quarterback hits on him, and yeah, he got sacked once. But you saw how efficient Joe was in this game, 18 for 24, 243 yards, averaging 10.1 yards on average per completion, 1 touchdown, no interception, although there was one instance on one of those quarterback hits where they hit Joe Flacco's arm, and it looked like that errant throw was going to get picked off. But fortunately for the Ravens, that did not happen, because if that linebacker had that linebacker got that pick, that would have been a return to the house.
What about that? What about that one weird throw that he made to Marlon Brown, where he was trying to like get it to him like on an instant? He saw that the route was jumped by a defensive back and threw it away. No flag was called on that for intentional grounding.
There were a lot of bad calls in that game.
Yeah, I mean, come on, pass interference for getting your feet tangled. What are you doing, refs? If the penalties offset. I mean, yeah, if the penalties did not offset, it would have went against the Ravens because Steve Smith had an illegal hand to the face. But Smith and Beccaro getting into it, and Beccaro's the one that gets the penalty when Steve Smith was the one who wanted to swear revenge on him. I mean, but you were mentioning 9 of 13 on third down the Ravens were, and a lot of that was because on third down, New Orleans would bust out this all-out blitz where they bring like 8 guys, and then it'd just be man-to-man coverage in the backfield, and Flacco would recognize that. Marlon Brown took advantage of it. Torrey Smith took advantage of it. Steve Smith Sr. took advantage of man-to-man coverage. The Saints had absolutely no answer for the Ravens in terms of man-to-man and that all-out blitz. They were trying to create pressure because that was pretty much the only way you could pretty much stop him, and they failed on that occasion. The offensive line played great in that game because, look, when
especially in the run, too.
Yeah, when Justin Forsett is able to put over 180 yards, 182 yards, and you saw Joe Flacco stay, you know, 3 hits, 1 sack, and was able to pick up all of those blitzes and recognize those blitzes, the line gave him just enough time to where he can see a man open in man-to-man coverage. That offensive line, you got to give credit where credit is due right there.
Yeah, especially considering that they were lackluster in the last several games. And, you know, even in the Tennessee game, looked a little shaky, and maybe they needed that bye week to kind of get things together. I did see a much healthier Eugene Monroe, which was a huge factor in the Ravens' 5-2 start to begin the season. And if you have to give a credit to a portion of the offensive line, give it to the right side. You had Jeremy Zuda at center, of course, snapping the ball well to Flacco to Forsett. But Marshall Yanda at right guard and Ricky Wagner at right tackle were a huge factor in this game and just opened up holes for Forsett to just bust through and gain good yardage. And do you know what Justin Forsett's yards per carry is this season?
It is well over 6.
It's well over 6. Well, as I'm looking right now, 5.8. yards per carry.
Okay, so it's right around 6.
Yep, that means every 2 carries gets a first down plus a couple yards. That's insane.
Well, in a perfect world it does, but we all know those yards don't usually come like that.
But how about the year that Forsett's been having, though? I know usually in Ravens wins and most wins this season, me and Ray usually say, wow, what a year Forsett's having. Well, it's an understatement considering the journey he's went through. What, he had, 6 carries last season, all of last season, behind Arian Foster with the Texans, and now the year he's having, he has 903 yards, 7 touchdowns, well on his way to a Pro Bowl nod. What a story. What a story right there for a guy at 29 years of age, and knowing how running backs are in the National Football League, it's more of a league where by 29, you're pretty much dead in the water and out on waivers and never heard from again.
Yeah, his career high prior to this season, that was with 2009, the Seattle Seahawks. He came in the league in 2008 with the Colts and didn't see any action with the Colts or the Seahawks in his first year. 2009, he had 114 carries for 619 yards, 5.4 yards a carry, believe it or not. But it was it just wasn't meant to be. He's been kind of a journeyman throughout the NFL since then because he had to play behind Marshawn Lynch. Not a bad stats right there. Then behind, as you mentioned, Arian Foster. But now he has found a home here in Baltimore where he is the primary back, and he has shown that he is deserving of a primary back, and he's a steal if you need him on your fantasy team as well. I mean, come on, he probably beat a lot of people or created some decent comebacks this week. All right, so we were impressed with the Ravens' win in New Orleans, but now they have to face San Diego, which the Ravens are on the outside looking in terms of the playoff picture, because everybody in the AFC North keeps winning, and so do the Ravens, and as well, they have to look at other AFC teams. One of the teams that are in front of the Ravens are the San Diego Chargers right here, and lo and behold, they're facing them this week.
Yep, all four teams in the AFC North with 7 wins. Of course, you have the Bengals at 7-3-1 on the year, and then the rest of the AFC North is 7-4.
How crucial is that tie all of a sudden?
No, how crucial is it to the league that a team like the Tampa Bay Bucks, who are only 2 games out in the NFC North, could win their division? The Ravens could win 10 games, 11 games. They might not even make the playoffs.
That will be a travesty. You'll see some...
You'll see an NBA or NHL-type system where the top 6 teams by winning percentage will get in. And, oh, if you're in a division, nope, sorry. You didn't have a good winning percentage. You're not in. But
Are you going by that ESPN article I cited a couple weeks ago in my 2-minute rant where they said they should have a seeded system as opposed to division winners?
I'm not really going off of that. I didn't even read that article, but I do think...
Oh, gee, thanks for paying attention to my 2-minute rants there, you jerk.
But, you weren't paying attention to that Led Zeppelin 2-minute rant. But anyway, though... Looking at the NFL, the way it's constructed, no, there isn't going to be any seeding. The NFL playoff system is as good as any professional sports, in all around the world. I mean, you could look at the World Cup. You could look at Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL. Yeah, they had their playoff systems. But it just seems like the NFL has the best parity in all professional sports when it comes to playoff positioning, seeding, what have you. Even the divisions, the way they are set up. We know who the stronger teams are. We know who the weaker teams are. If a weaker team gets a division title like the Seattle Seahawks did a couple years ago when they were 7-9, so be it. That's the way the league's constructed.
Yeah, and say what you want to about a 7-9 team making the playoffs, but the 7-9 Seahawks beat the Saints, the Super Bowl defending champions, that year. And that was the game that Marshawn Lynch became a household name with his beast mode run, where he broke, like, I think 9 tackles. And you saw that game. Yeah, that any team can beat any other team, unless your name is the New York Jets. And that, yeah, that going more with that with the 2-minute rant. But going up against the Chargers, Ravens are 5-4 all time against the Chargers. Their recent being a 16-13 overtime win in 2012, and we all remember that game, don't we?
Yep, that was the 4th-and-29 play that changed the course of the Ravens' 2012 season.
Hey, diddle, diddle, who must not be named up
he
the middle.
He must not be named, yeah. Ray something.
Chris Benoit,
yeah. Looking at the Chargers, the way they started off the season, they lost their first game of the week on the road against the Arizona Cardinals. It was an 18-17 loss. But Arizona would go on eventually to be one of the best teams in the NFC, or even one of the best teams in the NFL, especially with the way their defense plays. Ever since that week one loss, the Chargers beat the Seattle Seahawks at home 30-21. They beat Buffalo on the road in week 3, 22-10. They beat Jacksonville in week 4 at home. Come on. 33-14. They shut out the New York Jets 31-0 at home in week 5.
That's not hard. They got a revolving door quarterback.
Week 6, they beat Oakland at Oakland 31-28. As that was expected. But since week 7, they lost to the Kansas City Chiefs 23-20 at home. They lost on the road to the Denver Broncos in week 8, 35-21. Week 9, lose on the road to the Miami Dolphins 37-0. They then had their bye week, and then they go week 11 winning against Oakland 13-6. And week 12, they beat St. Louis at home 27-24. Now, do you see a pattern compared to the beginning of the year and up to just recently?
I see quite the uptick where the Ravens could be the one that actually seems to be swinging in their favor.
Yeah, absolutely. And you see how dominant that offense was against the Saints. Yeah, we know the Saints defense and the San Diego defense are two totally different worlds there in terms of their style of play and the yards they allow. But when you look at the Chargers at the beginning of the year, they seemed to be dominating opponents. It just seemed like head coach McCoy and Phillip Rivers seemed to be on the right page and seemed to be on this career revival. But since week 7 of the season, it just seems like the Chargers were just falling to the wayside. Granted, they won their last two games, but they really didn't win their last two games by much.
No, they didn't. And I also remember that matchup in 2012 against the Ravens. That cost North Turner his job.
Yep, it cost North Turner his job, and I think it cost the GM his job, if I believe that was the same guy that had Cam Cameron and Marty Schottenheimer when they were the head coach offensive coordinator combo there.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at this matchup. The Ravens, by the way, is they're favored by 5 points in this game. And the weather is supposed to be pretty decent on Sunday, and like in the 50s.
It's not going
to
be a blizzard.
No blizzard. No Buffalo style blizzard here. There's not even going to be a blizzard, you know, later this week. I mean, come on, the people are freaking out about it because it's snow. But come on, people, it's winter. Well, it's not really winter time just yet. It's still fall. I mean, I cannot believe this. I went out a week ago to mulch my leaves and rake them, and it's already in the 20 degree temperatures and it's freezing. I got to bring stuff in or else it's going to freeze, and I had to. You know what, Josh? I had to turn off my outside spigots this week.
Right.
Yeah, I had to turn them off just to make sure that the pipes didn't freeze. Yeah. In November. Not December, but November.
Yep, and now it's a little mild out as of this podcast, but that temperature may go down eventually. Here is a stat that stands out to me, though. You do have the Chargers ranked 13th in the NFL with 248.2 yards gained through the air on offense. In rushing yards, they are one of the worst teams in the league, 27th overall, only 89.5 yards per game. So
long way away from LaDainian Tomlinson.
Yeah, long way away from LaDainian Tomlinson or even a healthy Ryan Matthews, for that matter. So the Ravens' defensive line really shouldn't worry too much about the Chargers' running backs considering what they've done this year. Now, on the defensive side of things, this is where it kind of swings to the Chargers' favor here. The Chargers allow, they're in the middle of the road here in the stat. They allow 108.8 rushing yards per game, but they allow the sixth least passing yards per game at 221.3. Looking at Monday Night Football and what the Ravens did on the ground, what Justin Forsett did, and looking at how the Chargers have stopped the run, or you know, so far this year, they're 15th in run defense. You can tell that Coach McCoy is telling his Chargers team to key in on Forsett. I don't expect Forsett to get 182 rushing yards in this game. I think he's going to get a little bit more less than that. I'm going to say he'll probably get 110 offensive yards total. I don't think he'll get any more. I don't think he'll get any less.
And that's including receiving and rushing.
Yep. Well, yeah, combined offensive yards.
I know that, Josh. I was just making sure that you were on the same page as I was.
I was on the same page, of course.
All right, yeah, so they're keying in on Justin Forsett, but I'm making a prediction here. Well, Joe Flacco has over 300 passing yards.
So
how about them apples?
You think Joe Flacco is going to throw for over 300 yards against this team?
He's due.
Yeah, he is due. I think he's due for a great home performance because we really haven't seen Joe Flacco put up a nearly epic stat line at home, 400 yards, 3 touchdowns, somewhere along that neighborhood. But I do think he is due. And seeing how the Chargers have been streaky this year, starting off the season hot, then going cold, and then going a little bit warm again, but just barely getting by, I don't think they're going to be getting by the Ravens in Week 13. I'm going to say it'll be high scoring, but I predict the Ravens win this game 29-20. I think it'll be a comfortable end of the fourth quarter for the Ravens.
So that 20 is also going to be a junk time thing where it was actually 29-13.
Yeah, pretty much. You could say that.
All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and say that it's going to be 27 to... We'll go 19.
27-19. All right, so it's an 8-point deficit. So the Chargers will have to try to get a touchdown with a 2-point conversion towards the end.
Yeah, and it's...
Does Rivers throw a pick six?
I see that this game... I don't want to say that it's easy because, whenever people say that about a team, it tends to not be easy and it tends to go the opposite way. But I can't see the Baltimore Ravens not defeating the San Diego Chargers this week. It's just,
especially at home, because those home wins, especially when you're contending for January football, it is very crucial.
I mean, come on, they had a victory over the Tennessee Titans and the New Orleans Saints right now. They beat the San Diego Chargers. All of a sudden, they're that hot team right now. They're the team that you got to roll the dice with, and right now, going into the playoffs, that's what you want out of an NFL team. You want the hot hand, and they are perfectly capable of doing that, because after San Diego, they go up against Miami, and that's also going to be a team that they're looking outside in.
Miami, another streaky team, though, a team that started off hot, but if they lose to the New York Jets in Week 13...
I don't think that's going to happen.
But if they do on Monday Night Football, then all of a sudden that game looks like meaty pickings for the Baltimore Ravens defense.
I mean, come on, can we name a team that's worse than the Washington Redskins right now? That would be the New York Jets. And the Oakland Raiders.
Oakland Raiders. Tampa Bay Bucks.
They're not worse than the Washington Redskins. The Bucks beat the Redskins after a bye week.
That is true.
A bye week, Josh.
Yeah, that is true.
Okay, see, the Ravens were the total opposite of what the Redskins were. They came out of the bye week refreshed and ready to play. And I can even say that the Oakland Raiders are not worse than the Washington Redskins right now, because right now the Raiders stock is up because they got their first victory.
Yeah, and I said this on, I didn't say it on Facebook because there really is no voice outlet for Facebook yet, but I did post on Facebook that if the Oakland Raiders had a damn good offensive lineman and a damn good wide receiver with Derek Carr at quarterback, that team could be a winner, and I wouldn't sleep on them in the next couple years. If they stick with that quarterback, I think they'll be a good team.
What gives them a chance, though, is that Al Davis is no longer owning the team.
Well, may he rest in peace. Yeah, he was a winner in the 70s and 80s, but of course, a new regime up in Oakland, and a regime that has to get out of their own version of the black hole.
Yeah, so the black hole is that the Baltimore Ravens may or may not make the playoffs, but I will say this, though. If they beat the Chargers, that could be the catalyst like it was in 2012 to a turnaround for a season. And they're primed to do that again, and it's remarkable how they're going to be able to do this if they were to pull it off. And I'm excited to see what's going to happen on Sunday, Josh. I would really like to see a Ravens win against the San Diego Chargers and have maybe a kind of a little bit of a repeat of the 2012 season where they were kind of limping along up to that point and then just blew the doors open after that.
Now, what do you think happens if the Ravens lose this game? What do you think the emotions will be afterwards?
It's going to be
because San Diego is a good team in their own right.
It's going to be pretty damning considering the fact that right now the Chargers are ahead of the Ravens in the playoff hunt, and then you have it to where that division, 7 wins, everybody has 7 wins in the AFC North, so unless that entire division loses, which I don't think is going to happen, then what's going to happen is that the Ravens, their playoff chances go way down. And it's unbelievable to say that, given that it's just one game, but that one game is just crucial because there's so much on the line here with the San Diego Chargers. Like I said, ahead in the playoff race, and everybody else in the division has the same amount of wins as you, and the Bengals are leading you because of a tie.
All right, now moving on from Ravens football to Orioles off-season baseball. You really can't have baseball in the off-season, I guess. You can have baseball-related moves, but
you have baseball moves. Baseball moves on top of moves, as John Madden would say.
Yeah, you have you do have winter leagues, though, but most MLB players don't participate in winter league anyway. But
unless you're trying to make it to the bigs. Yeah.
The Orioles really didn't make any big moves per se, but I do think their biggest move wasn't so much on the roster, but it was so much in their coaching staff.
It was the fact that Jim Pressly's no longer hitting coach.
After 4 seasons with the Orioles, too.
And he was quite the catalyst in getting this Orioles team to be the offensive juggernaut that they've been the last couple of years.
Yep, the chicks digging the long ball, the power hitters you had up there, but considering that the team had a 256 team batting average in 2014, you had to think that eventually Buck Showalter and Dan Duquette, they were thinking to themselves, you know what, we could do better at the plate in 2015. And yeah, we did win, you know, we did win the American League East, but in order to repeat as American League East champions, we have to get that batting average up because we're not going to get away with it for a second year in a row.
Not with a second year in a row, especially since right now, as it's been reported this past week by Dan Connolly, the Baltimore Sun, is that the Orioles are out of the running for Andrew Miller. He is not going to re-sign with the Baltimore Orioles. He is courting 10 teams right now, all 10 of them not located in Baltimore.
Not even located on I-95 anywhere in those parts?
I mean, no. the 10 teams were kind of not named, but one of them was not the Baltimore Orioles. And
good for him. Good for him, though. He deserves it.
I mean, he wants $10 million a year. Would you pay that for a reliever?
If that reliever had closer ability, I would.
Well, Andrew Miller clearly has closer ability. There's no doubt about that.
I mean,
as of right now, but closers are a dime a dozen.
Of course they are, but any guy that has the stuff that he has and has the ability to close out games, because let's face it, any team he signs with, even if he is a lefty specialist, if their closer goes down and is inconsistent, Miller's going to get that opportunity to close games, and that's why he's going for that contract.
He's held opponents to a .181 batting average since 2012. He's also had 202 strikeouts and a 2.57 ERA for one Andrew Miller. So I would say maybe he would be worth $10 million, but for a reliever, you got to wonder, are they going to spend the money or are they not? For that, we just got our answer this past week. The Baltimore Orioles are out of the running for Andrew Miller, and that's kind of a shame considering the fact that he was also a big key part to the Orioles winning the AL East. So Andrew Miller, $10 million a year, not having it. But as I saw Peter Schmuck of the Baltimore Sun write, is that Dan Duquette is not afraid to spend money and is not afraid to make trades, but he's not in any hurry right now.
Yeah, it kind of reminds you of the last offseason that the Orioles had.
It's exactly like the last offseason the Orioles had, to where he's waiting for getting a bargain in the spring.
You know, Dan Duquette would say, yeah, you can have these big money guys, they'll pass by. We'll let the Hanley Ramirez's, we'll let Pablo Sandoval, we'll let these kind of guys go to the Boston Red Sox and sign their big money contract.
Yeah, how'd that work out for the Toronto Blue Jays the last couple of years?
By the way, speaking of Toronto Blue Jays, did you hear about the Nick Markakis rumors?
Yeah, they're the latest one.
Yep, if Nick Markakis and the Orioles don't work things out on a new contract, the Orioles will heavily go after outfielder Melky Cabrera.
Okay, would you be cool with settling? I mean, quote unquote settling for Melky Cabrera if you don't re-sign Nick Markakis?
No. I'd rather have Steve Pierce out in right field than Melky Cabrera, to tell you the truth. Heck, I'd rather have Delman Young out in right field than Melky Cabrera.
Despite how Steve Pierce was performed in the playoffs, you still are really high on him?
Well, after that kind of season, you hope that at his age and as long as he's played in the majors that he finally got it in the sense of a word. But Nick Markakis, I can't imagine the Orioles failing the contract talks with him. I do think they do get a deal signed with him. I do think it will be a deal that will make both sides happy. I just can't imagine Melky Cabrera out in right field. That would dishearten Orioles fans right there, especially what Markakis has meant to that club.
Yeah, and also on the rumor mill as well with John Lester could be re-signing with the Red Sox.
Yeah, the Boston Red Sox losing two of the last 3 years. Granted, 2013 they did win the World Series. But in 2014, we're just so terrible.
Yeah, by the way, they did win a World Series the last 3 years.
Yeah, they did. But just signing big money and, you know, making a splash. But we did see this happen before. We saw it happen before with Josh Beckett. We've seen it happen with, I think it was Mike Gonzalez, the first baseman. It just, you see all these signings that Boston will make, and they plan to make these splashes, but you got to remember, Hanley Ramirez at one point, though, was a highly prized prospect out of the Red Sox organization and then was traded away to the Florida Marlins, and now they're in the Miami Marlins. I just can't imagine.
You're thinking of Adrian Gonzalez, by the way.
Adrian Gonzalez. I said Mike Gonzalez.
You said Mike Gonzalez, the guy that had the Rockaway delivery? I'm like, no, that can't be right.
Yeah, Mike Gonzalez. Yeah. Adrian Gonzalez is who I was thinking of, but you look at the team that the Red Sox construct, especially with the way they do things, it's Yankee-esque in a way. You have them going after Hanley Ramirez, who was one of their highly prized prospects, who has been a solid offensive player at shortstop since he started in the majors. You have Pablo Sandoval, multiple-time World Series champion, just a lovable character in terms of Major League Baseball popularity. And, of course, once David Ortiz leaves, I guess they got to have their I guess they had their moneymaker in Pablo Sandoval and Panda Bear, as the Giants fans called him.
Kung Fu Panda.
Kung Fu Panda,
that is Pablo Sandoval signing with the Boston Red Sox.
So, but what kind of news backlash would you say this brings in regards to the Orioles' moves they made this season?
Because it's going to be the same as the last couple of years. And
no, because I'm sure there are fans that are mad at these moves, saying, oh, Boston signed Sandoval, and they signed Ramirez, and we haven't signed anybody yet.
Yeah, well, look how many players that the Toronto Blue Jays signed that a couple years ago. Look where they finished off. Look at the Miami Marlins signing all those guys. Look at everybody signing
A-Rod. Especially Giancarlo Stanton.
Yeah. Good grief, that contract.
You could have signed 10 guys with that contract.
You could have signed 10 guys with that contract. You could have signed 10 coaches with that contract as well. And nobody learns their lesson in Major League Baseball. Has anybody seen the last couple of years in Major League Baseball where it's not the big money that's winning, it's money ball winning championships?
Yeah, I guess most people forget. Most people have short memories of what happened last season with the Orioles. Yeah, the 2013-2014 offseason was slow for the Orioles in terms of picking up solid players. But down the line, you did eventually fill the holes that you needed, even though Ubaldo Jimenez didn't turn out the way the Orioles hoped. It still worked out for them in the end.
Do you think that Ubaldo Jimenez signing had something to do with the fact that they're not in the running for Andrew Miller anymore?
I think so.
I think that it has a huge factor on that, and it's not Peter Angelos pulling the strings on that. It's one Dan Duquette pulling the strings on that. Everybody's saying, oh, well, the Orioles got to spend money. They've shown they're not afraid to spend money. They signed J.J. Hardy to a contract in the middle of a playoff run.
Yeah, and speaking of Orioles moves, they did acquire a right fielder. This is kind of where it scares me a little bit here. They did acquire a right fielder off waivers from the Oakland Athletics, Alex Hassan. And looking at his stats, he is 26 years old, will be 27 next season, is 6'3", 220 pounds. So solid, good size for a right fielder, but hasn't really played much, hasn't had much major league experience.
They also signed Paul Janisch.
Paul Janisch, yeah, interesting.
Nice little major league journeyman there.
Okay, I got to talk about Paul Janisch for a second. Isn't his career batting average around .214, and he plays multiple infield positions?
Yeah, that sounds like somebody they already have.
Yeah, Ryan Flaherty.
But hey, Ryan Flaherty was a factor there the latter part of the season there. Come on, you got to give guy a little bit of credit. I mean, Paul Janisch, though, 32 years old. You think he'll be able to pull Flaherty-esque numbers for the Baltimore Orioles?
I do expect that to happen.
Yeah, well, he signed a minor league deal, so don't expect him to, be gangbusters. I mean, they signed Johan Santana to a minor league deal last year. Look what happened to him.
Yeah, well, I wish me and Ray had better news to bring you as far as the Orioles offseason is concerned.
Hey, maybe them waiting is good news, Josh.
Maybe it is good news.
Not making a boneheaded move early and just taking your time and playing your cards right, that's what Dan Duquette, the general manager of this team, does. That's what he's had a history of doing. He built a winning product in Boston, wasn't there for the World Series. That was Theo Epstein that was there for that. But you saw where Dan Duquette did that with Boston. He's inherited Andy McPhail's building blocks, was able to take the building blocks and make a mountain of tower with that. And you saw what Dan Duquette has done. I think that maybe Dan Duquette is getting to the point, I can't say it so much because Ozzie Newsome's had a longer tenure with the Baltimore Ravens / Cleveland Browns than Dan Duquette has had with the Baltimore Orioles. But do you think maybe Dan Duquette gets on that trust level, as in you trust in Ozzie, you trust in Danny?
I really don't know if that is the case, because most of Major League Baseball's popularity stems on what you do in the offseason, what you do to improve your team, whether it's re-signing a key player to a multi-year deal like the Marlins did with Giancarlo Stanton, because let's face it, he's their moneymaker in Miami.
He's the only moneymaker.
Even though Miami doesn't really draw much out there.
They trade away all their moneymakers.
Yeah.
So they decided to say, hey, we signed a moneymaker, and you pretty much bankrupted your whole team again. Come on, man. The offseason free agency, to me in baseball right now, it's kind of overrated, because it's all about how you scout and all about how you draft and all about how you develop your minor league players. The Orioles have too many players eligible for arbitration. They've got players they got to re-sign. I mean, they're playing the wait-and-see game with everybody else. Nick Markakis' contract negotiations are in limbo right now. That's just Dan Duquette's offseason right now. That's the way it is.
Now, let me ask you this. As many podcasts as we have left in 2014, do you predict that there will be a move made by the Orioles, a significant move made by the Orioles in the offseason before 2014 closes?
No.
You don't think so?
I'm going to say it's going to be pretty much the same narrative every week. You see all-star
smoke after, and mirrors.
You see all-star after all-star. You hear the rumors going around that the Orioles are interested in this guy. They're not interested in this guy. This guy doesn't want to play in Baltimore. And then you have it to where you see all-star after all-star go off the rocker, and then the Orioles are sitting there doing nothing. And then all of a sudden spring training rolls around, and you've got yourself a legitimate five-starter punch, and you've got yourself a legitimate lineup.
Yeah,
it very well could happen once again, Josh. History is going to repeat itself.
So does that mean we can predict Paul Yanish hitting 302 with 30 bombs?
Oh, stranger things have happened. One Paul Yanish. What an amazing name, by the way, for baseball. That's just a perfect baseball name in Paul Yanish. It's almost like Esteban Yan. Do you remember him?
Yeah, I do remember Esteban Yan. It's such a shame, though, that his last name is pronounced Janish. Because he would have had a hell of a baking career after his major league career.
The Janus Danish.
Yep, there you go, right there.
I mean, I like Boog's Barbecue better, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I don't think Janus Danish will succeed Boog's anytime
but
soon.
But what about Danish Janish?
That too.
You could flip it around there and have yourself a nice little stock and say, wait, is it Janish Danish or Danish Janish? Dyslexia people will have a hard time with that one.
I'm sure Paul Yanish has heard too many of those jokes by now to be like, ah, very funny. I know my last name sounds like a pastry dish. I get it.
Somebody who's been hearing way too many jokes lately is one Brady Hoke of Michigan.
Oh, man. How about that team? You know what amazes me about that team the most? Didn't they win an Orange Bowl a couple years ago, one of the most prestigious bowls that you could win in all of college football?
Yeah, but the Terps also won that about 13 years ago. Ralph Regan did it in almost his second year.
Yeah, and it's troubling to see a team like Michigan fall to the, you know, to the level that they've had in terms of winning. But the way the Maryland Terrapins, and we gotta talk about them as well, because yeah, we know the games they lost. We expected them to lose those games. Well, except West Virginia, I really didn't see that coming. But the Maryland Terrapins, though, are now 7-4 on the year. Could win their eighth game against Rutgers this coming weekend. But let's talk about the Michigan matchup. It was on the road, and
in the big house, the newcomers come to town in Michigan. You would think that Michigan was going to roll all over the Terps, especially since they're playing a man down without their best player in Stephon Diggs.
You know who their best player was, though? And I hate to say it because it'll make me cringe.
C.J. Brown.
Yes. Not as a quarterback, though, but as an athlete. That is one thing I've always said about C.J. Brown. I think as a quarterback, a collegiate quarterback, he isn't any good. But as an athlete, though, does he have a chance to compete at the NFL Combine in 2015? Yeah, he does. Good-sized player, and he proved it in that game against Michigan. What was the stat line with C.J. Brown and rushing yards? Oh, yeah, 18 carries, 87 yards, and a touchdown.
An 8-yard touchdown run that tied it up for the Maryland Terrapins. That was after a roughing-the-kicker penalty on Jordan Lewis. That was a key play in the fourth quarter that kept the Maryland drive going. They went to tie it up. They tied it up with C.J. Brown's 8-yard run, eventually winning it on a Wes Brown. Hey, trust in Brown. It's Brown Town for the Maryland Terrapins. Wes Brown, a 1-yard touchdown with 5:59 remaining, and they were able to go over Michigan 23-16. Michigan gave them a lot of help, though.
Did it make some Brown noise, too?
Like a... No, none of those.
With the tuba, no.
No noise right there. Okay. But it was Michigan that almost looked like they had a Brown noise, because they were giving Maryland this game in the fourth quarter, a roughing the kicker penalty, as I said, and then they also had a bunch of missed field goals. They just gave the Terps a chance to win this game, and the fact that they were able to hang in the game as long as they did, Michigan had a 16-9 deficit, 69 lead over the Terps in the fourth quarter, and Maryland just racked up. They racked up and were able to score 23 points, and they were able to defeat Michigan 23-16. Fourth quarter was the big story in that game, because the first half was all about field goals.
Yep, and yeah, speaking of field goals, though, how about Brad Craddock? To me, I don't normally say this about Maryland players and best at their position, but Brad Craddock, to me, looks like the best kicker in all of college football right now.
Brad Craddock is not missing in action, too.
Nope.
That's a reference to a really horrible Chuck Norris series of movies, Braddock missing in action.
Oh, yeah. Braddock, is that like a name combo right there?
Braddock and Craddock.
Braddock and Craddock.
So, was Brad Craddock named after the Chuck Norris character of Braddock?
I think so. I think that's what he was named after.
I want to meet Brad Craddock's parents and see what they were concocting when they were coming up with that name.
You know who else on Maryland is having a very stellar year on defense and looks to be back within the next year or two? William Likely, the defensive back, the sophomore defensive back. 5'7", 175 pounds, a resident of Belgrade, Florida. 5 interceptions on the year, Ray Atkinson. I'm reading that wrong. 6 interceptions, excuse me.
How do you confuse a 5 and a 6? I can understand you.
He has one. I see a row of ones, and then it skips on the game log, and then, yeah.
I mean, I can understand confusing a 9 and a 6, but not a 5 and a 6.
And he's had 2 pick sixes this year, too. Talk about a talent on defense for the Terrapins right there.
Yeah, all of a sudden, Maryland moving to the Big Ten, was that a mistake or was it not, considering the fact that Maryland is 7-4 this year?
Well, I get to watch them on a network now that I can get on my cable provider, so that's always good.
You don't have to watch them on your smartphone anymore.
Nope, you don't have to watch them on the smartphone anymore on the Gamecast.
Or a little window on your laptop, because if you put that on full screen, it looks all fuzzy as all get out. Yeah, that was what Maryland football was reduced to the last couple of years before moving to the Big Ten. And now they are in the Big Ten. I can watch them on my nice, shiny, high-definition television with tremendous production values of the Big Ten Network. I mean, they do this thing, football in 60, where they replay all their Big Ten games in less than 60 minutes. So they cut out all the riffraff, and they play one play back-to-back. It's like, and C.J. Brown goes back to pass, and it's incomplete. Second down, C.J. Brown goes back, he hands it off, and it's a run for 10 yards. And third down, C.J. Brown, it's like, bam, wham, bam, bam, bam. They just hit you with play after play after play. I actually enjoy watching football in 60. I wish they could actually, we could have it the way, I know it doesn't compare to live TV or anything like that, live action, and you see everything in terms of when it, as it's happening, but I kind of like the whole football in 60 where it's all trimmed down and you chew out all the fat of an NFL game or a college football game. It makes it a little more, durable to watch, because let's just face it, when there's commercial breaks going on in football games, I'm either doing push-ups or I'm turning to another channel.
Looking at Maryland's final matchup of their Big Ten regular season, they host the Rutgers Scarlet Knights, who are 6-5 and fifth in the Big Ten East Conference.
Okay, they beat Michigan.
Rutgers is 6-5. Now, you know how many points Rutgers is allowing per game? The 92nd most in all of college football, 30.3.
Yowza.
Yeah. And they do score 24.2 per game, but yeah, 30.3, that's a lot.
So 20.2 per game on offense, 30.3 on defense. That doesn't bode well for the one Rutgers Scarlet Knights. One, he who must not be named, former team.
Yeah. So I predict a Maryland victory at Byrd Stadium. I say 30.3 to 24.2 Maryland.
What is this NFL.com scoring?
The Dewey Decimal System, just like put decimal points.
You know what? That could make football a little more interesting if you put in decimal points. Can you imagine losing
put them in fantasy points.
Can you imagine losing by 0.1 decimal point? A 1/10?
Oh, that would drive fans insane.
I'm like, we lost by a tenth.
He lost by a tenth.
A freaking tenth.
Let's look at college football and what's happened as far as this past weekend goes. Of course, the top 7 in the AP poll and the coaches poll stays the same, which means, yes, the top 4 stay the same. And you're looking at the top 4 right now. Alabama, Oregon, Florida State, Mississippi State are your top 4 teams. And you know, I just look at this college football season, the way it's turned out. Mississippi State led at number one for Lord knows how many weeks now.
For pretty much the entire first half of the season.
And, well, Mississippi State does have a shot still if they can win out, but that is a lot of wishing and hoping right there, Ray.
That it is, and you also look at some of the other teams that are on the bubble, so to speak. Yeah, college football now has a bubble.
Ohio State's on that bubble. TCU's on that bubble.
TCU as well. They had a bye week. I'm just thankful that the rankings didn't change, because it drives me nuts when I see that a team has a bye week and they get they get leaped in the standings. I'm like, well, what did they do? Well, what did they do wrong that the where they lose their position? It just college football rankings have always been kind of funky to me, which is why a 4-team playoff system, it's the first step towards everything else, but a 4-team playoff system doesn't solve the controversy that college football has had over the last couple of years with the BCS. I mean, you look at an Ohio State team, and everyone's looking at them and say, oh, well, they got that one loss earlier in the season, but this is a much different Ohio State team now. It's a freshman quarterback that's now got the reins, and Ohio State almost looks unbeatable as of right now, and they need to get some style points. They can do that against Michigan this week on November 29th.
Well, they definitely have to win the Big Ten championship, too.
They're going to be going up against Wisconsin. They got to be able to do that. They got to shut down Melvin Gordon. How about Melvin Gordon, though?
Keeps setting records,
no,
man.
No, but the week that he sets the record, it gets broken.
Yeah. So
it took a lot more carries than four quarters to do it when Melvin Gordon didn't three. He also did it against Nebraska, whereas the other guy, we don't even remember his name because we're still thinking about Melvin Gordon. Melvin Gordon, though, if they shut him down, that could also speak volumes for them in the Big Ten championship and could leap them in the rankings. They still got some time here, but Ohio State has to be able to win and not play, you know, they shouldn't falter down the stretch like they've done the last year.
They can't succumb to the Wisconsin running game is what you're saying, because the way Gordon runs the ball – and we've seen running backs play for Wisconsin and have great success, Monty Ball being one of them, and him landing on an NFL roster this year. Granted, C.J. Anderson has taken over for the Denver Broncos since then. But, yeah, Melvin Gordon just making a case to be drafted in the first round in 2015, even though running backs seem to be a dime a dozen. He's making a healthy case for himself there.
All I'm thinking about when I'm looking at these college football rankings is poor Marshall. They're the only undefeated team on that top 25, and they're 24.
Well, that goes to show you your strength of schedule.
Strength of schedule matters.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is why Maryland should have played Ohio State in the first week of the season. They would have won that game.
They could have won that game, considering they almost lost to Navy.
Yeah.
I went to that game. I know. It was they had no option for the read option that Navy was running, but then they eventually figured it out and were able to score more than Navy did, because that was basically an offensive battle, not a defensive battle.
And looking at the scores from this past weekend, you had Mississippi State winning 51-0 over Vanderbilt. You had Oregon winning 44-10 over Colorado. Of course, by Oregon standards, anything less than 50 points is a huge disappointment on offense. Isn't that crazy? If you played for a college football team, you score less than 50 points, your coach is just going to you saying, guys, that was a pitiful win. You only scored 44 points. What is wrong with you?
You're going to have like a Jay Gruden-style press conference where it says, okay, you need to worry about yourself. I'll worry about the other guys. That's my job.
Here was a notable one. Florida State escaping Boston College 20-17. These guys, I'll tell you what, I know we harp on Florida State a lot. Paper champions, Ray. The paper Tigers. Remember that phrase we coined in October with the Detroit Tigers? Paper Tigers is what the Florida State Seminoles are.
Are you taking credit for the phrase paper Tigers? Because that's been used before this podcast.
Well, I'm not really taking credit for it, but we're bringing it back in terms of...
We're bringing it back. Like we're bringing sexy back. Okay, got you. So the Florida State Seminoles, they've been barely escaping the last couple of wins. Jimbo Fisher is coming out and claiming that people saying that they've been barely winning these games and they should be deranked as asinine, which I would semi-agree with that, considering that, I mean, come on, they're still beating. They're winning. They are winning. And granted, it's
barely.
Barely, but you got to look at that. That's the way college football works. Like I said, mentioned earlier, you got poor little Marshall tucked down there at rank 24. At 11-0.
And undefeated.
Undefeated, and they're the only team in the top 25 that is undefeated, and yet they're 24th. That's the way college football works. It's your strength of schedule and how well you mollywop the teams you're supposed to mollywop.
Yeah, and you have Florida State that is 11-0 and 8-0 in the ACC conference. It's incredible to see how they've won these games, especially against inferior football teams. Even though I don't want to call a big conference inferior, it's the truth. The ACC, outside of Clemson and outside of Florida State, is a pretty weak football conference.
How about that, considering that the Terps decided they wanted to leave the Atlantic Coastal Conference and have,
and now may end up being a strong team the following season.
Yeah, and they end up being a strong team the following season. They're going to a bowl game. They're going to a Big Ten style bowl. How about that for the Maryland Terrapins? I think they make the right decision, Josh.
Okay, so you have Alabama, Oregon, Florida State, and Mississippi State as of now ranked in the top four going into this four-team playoff. Does Florida State have a chance against any of those teams, or does it just seem like the talent pool, the talent gap is so wide that Jimbo Fisher, Jameis Winston, and that Florida State defense just can't overcome it?
I don't know if it's that the wide talent gap. I just think it's more the fact that Florida State may be playing down to their opponents as of right now, the way that team's been structured lately, but they could have a resurgence. I mean, it's a long time before these playoff games commence. They could have a good amount of preparation time and get back in the swing of things and become the dominant Florida State that they were at the beginning of the season. And as long as Jameis Winston keeps his nose clean, you could also see that they could avoid distractions. Just keep him off Twitter as well. That was a terrible decision to put him on Twitter, have him ask me anything on Jameis Winston. Did you not think that most of the questions were going to be about crab legs and sexual assaults?
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely not a wise decision. But
wise decisions are.
Yeah, I know you were going to do that. I was about to do that, too.
Yeah, I wanted to beat you to your little segue since you wanted to be the master segue. But our wise decisions are we've decided on two-minute rants. Josh, you go first. I've gone first the last 5 weeks.
Okay. I'm having a gripe with this whole Marshawn Lynch refusing to talk to the media scandal or hoopla that's been going on for the past 2 weeks, especially with Roger Goodell coming in and deciding to get involved in this whole thing. You know, there is this thing in this country called freedom of speech, but there's also a freedom not to talk. You can refuse to speak. You could be in a court case where you're tried for a fender bender, and if a lawyer goes and says, did you do this purposely and, you know, without care, you have the right to say, you know what, I refuse to speak on those grounds due to incrimination. You have the right to do that. That is your right. Much like Marshawn Lynch has the right not to speak to the media because anything he could say could be construed, and it could incriminate him towards his team and his fan base. And we know we've seen the trouble that Marshawn Lynch has had this year. We've seen the trouble he's had in the media, out in the fans' eyes, and there are rumors circulating that this may be his final year with the Seattle Seahawks. Yep, the same Seattle Seahawks team that won a Super Bowl in the 2013-14 season. It's amazing to me that Roger Goodell wants to step in and be law and order once again, fining a guy $100,000 for exercising his right not to talk. So, what does Marshawn Lynch do? Well, he does abide to Roger Goodell's law, but he finds a way around it. He decides to be short and sweet with the media. So, Marshawn, did you think you have a good game? Yep, I did. So, what did you think of the play call by Russell Wilson? It was stellar. And I guess you could say that is Marshawn Lynch's big attack against the media by refusing to speak to them. And the NFL really shouldn't enforce their players to do that.
I would think so, but at the same time, the NFL is a private organization, and the Constitution applies to a government and not a private organization. So.
But aren't they a publicly traded company as well?
Well, it doesn't really matter about that, considering that the Constitution doesn't follow a company, Josh.
Well, it should. I mean,
it should. That was a perfect Marshawn Lynch answer right there.
Players should have the right not to talk to me if they want to. Eddie Murray was like that when he was with the Orioles.
All right, well, I'm going with the fact that I'm going with a positive spin here for my two-minute rant as well. I'm going to say this, and everyone was harping on the fact that the Buffalo Bills should have played that game in Buffalo in 5 feet of snow. But you looked at that game that they had against the New York Jets. They played the game, a home game, in Detroit. Detroit won the bid. It was a bidding war that a couple cities had. I think it was between Detroit, Washington, and a couple other teams. And Washington and Detroit were fighting at the end of the day. But it was Detroit who won the battle. It was Buffalo Bills over the New York Jets, 38-3. Now, granted, it is the New York Jets. The Jets have a revolving door at quarterback where the quarterbacks stay in the revolving door. So you got one guy one week, another guy the other week, and it's the same guy a couple weeks later. I mean, come on. Geno Smith was benched for Michael Vick, and now Michael Vick was benched for Geno Smith. It's everything comes full circle. But the Buffalo Bills had very, very limited practice this week, and they had to be snowmobiled out of Buffalo in order to get to a place where they can travel to Detroit in a safe manner. But people were told to stay off the roads. There was a driving ban in 5 feet of snow. No one was allowed to travel to a stadium. Even if they were to play, it would be completely deserted. There wouldn't be the big flying snow that you see in New England. It wouldn't have been a very pretty sight. I mean, come on. I'm all for a fan of blizzards and ice bowls and everything like that. That's the way football should be played. And playing football in the snow is really fun. But playing it in 5 feet of snow, a little bit different. So you got to be able to understand that football is a spectator sport in the NFL, and you got to be able to find a way to get fans there safely. And the way they did that was move them to another city. And the Buffalo Bills, they found a way to win. Good teams find a way to win with the adversity given to them. And bad teams, they lose no matter what. And that's what the New York Jets did. The Buffalo Bills right now, they look like a perennial playoff team. Kyle Orton has reinvented that team as well from EJ Manuel. The Buffalo Bills seem like a legit team to me. They are, you know, they were, their backs were against the wall, and they performed admirably this past week.
Absolutely, and they have been one of the best stories in all of NFL this season.
Them and the Dolphins.
Especially with the revolving door at quarterback with Kyle Orton and EJ Manuel. And it's inspiring to see a team finally get out of the doldrums that they have been in for the 10-some-odd years. And same with the Cleveland Browns, too. A team that's been in the doldrums along
since
with
since they came into existence.
Yeah, exactly. Before we close the show out, me and Ray want to give our hearty support to Kansas City safety Eric Berry, who this past weekend was put on the non-football-related injury reserve for a mass found in his chest. Berry, multiple-time Pro Bowl safety for the Kansas City Chiefs, 25 years old and just a heck of an athlete at the safety position. And Berry released a message this past weekend saying, quote, "I am truly thankful for all the support from family, friends, coaches, teammates, and the entire Chiefs kingdom. At first, I was in shock with the diagnosis on Saturday and did not even want to miss a game. But I understand that right now I have to concentrate on a new opponent. I have great confidence in the doctors and the plan they are going to put in place for me to win this fight. I believe that I am in God's hands, and I have great peace in that. I know my coaches and teammates will hold things down here the rest of the season and until I am back running out the tunnel at Arrowhead. I am so thankful and appreciative of being a part of this franchise and playing in front of the best fans in the NFL. I will be back!" Exclamation point, end quote.
Yeah, I've got a friend of the family right now who's also battling lymphoma because he's seeing a lymphoma specialist this week because they think that's what it is. And
a lymphatic mass, yeah.
Yeah, and that one is causing fluid to build up in the lungs, and that's also not a pretty sight. But my heartfelt prayers go out to Eric Berry and his family. Hopefully beat this thing, man, and get back on the field and
just
get to
such
play.
Such a great athlete, too.
And do what you want to do. Yeah. Do what you love to do and continue living the dream along with that. But what are we talking about next week, Josh?
Talking about how full we were from Thanksgiving dinner.
Of course, and falling asleep from the tryptophan and the turkey like I always do.
You'll probably have a pumpkin pie on the side there, maybe.
I love pumpkin pie.
Especially, you got to have whipped cream on it, too, man. A lot of whipped cream.
Of course. And we'll be talking about maybe a Ravens win. Or are we talking about a Thanksgiving hangover?
Another Terps win over.
I said
Rutgers.
The Ravens or did
I know. I'm just adding to it. Of course, we'll talk about the Ravens win over the Chargers.
Okay.
A Terps win over Rutgers.
Will we have a free agent acquisition for the Baltimore Orioles?
Maybe.
Maybe as well.
Maybe.
Remember, we said maybe last week, and the Terps won on that maybe.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, maybe we'll be back next week.
Maybe we'll be back.
Yeah, we'll be back next week. All right.
All right, sounds good.
This is another edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. I am Ray Atkinson.
I'm Josh Hall.
We will see you all.